Let's go. Parsh Kisisa starts off the following. When you count, you lift up, literally, you lift the heads of Bnei Yisrael according to their numbers. Each person will give a redemption of their soul to God when you get counted. Then there won't be any plagues. It's an unbelievable little thing over here. That whenever you count a Jew by their heads, you know, you count up, and I don't want to do it, obviously, but you do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you start counting Jews like that. If you do that, then there is a major problem that it causes some type of a plague to go on to those people. And therefore, because of that, God had to make sure that Moshe, when he was counting them, would take from them a coin. And that coin would serve as sort of like a buffer between counting them. Instead of counting the person, they would count the coin itself. And that somehow would save you from the plague. Now, that's an unbelievable idea. What's going on with that plague exactly? Now, I'm not gonna be able to really go through the plague itself, but let's go into the shekel. It says, Zei nu kol over al pekudin. This is what you give anybody who passes by that gets counted. Machatzis a shekel b'shekel hakodesh. Half a shekel in a shekel hakodesh. That's the amount that you have to give. A half shek. That's not bad. The half shek is really not worth that much nowadays. How much is it? It's like, I don't know. It's
10 cents.
12, 15 cents, I guess, depending on the market of the day, you know? But like, it's 12, 15 cents, something like that. That's nothing. That's absolutely nothing. No, we know that. How did they get the idea of the shekel? Where did this coin come from? God showed it to Moshe. God gave it as a gift to Moshe. He gave him a picture of what it's supposed to be, and he pointed at it, Ke'ilu, with his finger, and said, Moshe, this is the coin that you have to go ahead and give.
They had a minted, right?
They had a minted. Okay, so here we go. The Ramban says that like all kings that lived throughout the nations, Moshe Rabbeinu also minted his own coin. He coined his own coin. There was his own little coin that had something on it. And he called it, he had a certain weight that he wanted it to be, and that's why it's called... What?
That's a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's the king anyways, you know? By the way, but he had a certain weight that it had to be, and he called it a shekel, as in the word mishkal. Mishkal is the word weight in Hebrew. So he called it a shekel because it had to be a certain weight in order for it to be good. And because mitzvos deal with this shekel, in other words, there were certain mitzvos that can only be done with the shekel. Anybody want to name one for me?
Perm.
Shekel, obviously. Now, the perm is not a deal right, so what are the deal right says? Pinina ben. A pinina ben has to be with a shekel akodesh. There has to be a pinion of a regular donkey or a regular cow has to be done with a shekel akodesh. And so to
expensive.
Well, now we do with silver because we don't know exactly what a shekel is. But the erchin as well, values of a person that you're giving over to the Beis HaMikdash, and donate this value over, etc. All those things are done with a shekel, with the shekel HaKodesh. The reason why it's called HaKodesh is because it's used for holy purposes. It's used for mitzvos. That's also why Hebrew is called Lashon HaKodesh. It's called Lashon HaKodesh for that reason, because it's used for all these holy things, for the Torah itself, for Divrei Torah. It's used for Nevuah, for prophecy. It's used for the names of God. All the names of God are originally in Hebrew, as well as the entire, all the Divrei Torah that we have. It's all written in that one way. So the Rambam says it's called Lashon HaKodesh, it's called the holy language, because there's no disgusting words in the Hebrew language. There's not one word that refers to a disgusting act, or refers to parts of the body that might be considered disgusting. No word refers to it that way. It's all like references. Like the Lashon that you use for a certain area of the body is called an aver. It's called the limb. So that is called. There's always sleeping with a person. It doesn't say the actual word of being with a person, the actual act of being with another person. The dirty words that you have in other languages don't exist in Hebrew, says the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't exactly agree with that. He argues a little bit, but he agrees that it is called Lashon HaKodesh because of the holy things that come through it. Now, the Rabbeinu Bachaya says another thing. How much of the shekel do you have to give? You don't have to give a whole shekel. What do you give?
A chatzi shekel.
Now, what's up with that? So everybody always says you got to look at yourself as if you're half full, not half empty. And you got to look at yourself, you have more to do, so you're always pulling yourself up and you got to get that other half shekel. That's nice. That's nice. There's got to be something more to it. So I like this word from the Rabbeinu Bachaya. The Rabbeinu Bachaya says this. It teaches us you have to weigh out. You have to weigh out all of your deeds. What you're doing for your body and what you're doing for your soul. What deeds am I doing that I'm doing for my body, my physical body, and what deeds am I doing that I'm doing for my soul, my spiritual self, something that's out there that has nothing to do with my actual physical body? What am I doing in both cases? Now, I, The Rabbeinu Bachaya says just this way, the Chatziya Shekel stands for Shekel means to weigh. You're supposed to weigh out every deed you do, whether you're doing it for your physical body. Am I doing it because it's what my body needs right now, or because it's what my spiritual soul needs right now? And there are times where you have to take a physical act and make it spiritual. And make it spiritual. In other words, davening is a spiritual act of me talking to God. But I'm using that physical to connect to the spiritual. I'm using it to connect to God. I'm using my prayer in order to find that little bit of a connection, like a little chain that pulls me right back to God. It's like God is putting down a chain and I'm climbing it. That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like a physical act that I'm doing in order to get spiritually close to God. Says the Ben Ish Chai, that's how a physical object, like a coin, could be an atonement for a spiritual thing, like a plague that gets caused by counting somebody. Does anybody understand that? I was just listening on the radio today. This guy named Mike Tirico. He's a guy who talks on ESPN Sports Radio, and he's talking on the radio. It was accidentally on sports radio. You know, I would never listen to sports radio. I mean, that's of course not, right? Either way, it was on this, and he was saying, you know how there's a certain curse that you're not allowed to talk about a streak when this streak is happening?
Yeah.
Meaning if there's a no-hitter.
You don't talk to the pitcher.
Can't talk about the pitcher pitching a no-hitter. Can't say it. You're not allowed to say it. Right? No. And on the bench, he's got to be put on the other side of the bench. So too, apparently, there was a player that had a free throw streak going. He had a free throw streak. He was hitting consecutive free throws. And he was on like a certain number. He still has the record, whatever it is. But he had a certain record amount of free throws made in a row. And he was catching up to that record. So he made his first free throw. And in between the two, the announcer said, oh, he is continuing on his streak of, I think it was 51, I don't remember, 51 consecutive free throws. Let's see if he continues. And then he missed the next free throw. So people were calling him out on it and saying, he's terrible. He broke the streak. It was him. And this guy, Mike, was saying, like, what do you mean? My words cannot affect what that guy is doing down there in the free throw line. And I'm like, yes, it can. What are you talking about? Not in a way that we can understand. Physically, there's no way. I didn't want to call him up and say it. But in a spiritual way, yes, words have an effect on different people. It can cause an ayin hara, an evil eye, that can go out in that person. We don't understand that sort of a concept, and it sounds strange. And I'll tell you, 10 years ago, I would have agreed with Mike Tirico. There's no way that a guy's words can affect it. But there is such a thing as an ayin hara, of staring at a person, looking at him, and making him lose, because it's like you're putting it on. No, he couldn't hear it. He's an announcer. You know, he's announcing on the radio. You couldn't do anything. But that's the idea over here as well. A coin, I give the coin, all of a sudden the plague is off me. I counted a guy by the head, but he gave a coin and then everything's all good. How does that work? All of a sudden the plague goes off. What happened to take the plague away?
Did he count the head or did he count the coin?
He's saying he counted the coin, but let's say you count the head. The problem with counting the head is bringing a plague upon that person. So what we're saying right now is what he did was he's physically, well, I guess somehow by doing something physical, it took away the spiritual problem that was here. Took away all the spiritual issues that were there around. That was the same exact problem with the ego. That was the problem with the ego. That they had a problem with the physical and the spiritual. How do we connect with God? They always thought we need some type of physical contact to always remind ourselves of God. They didn't understand when Moshe was gone, and we'll get to this a little bit later, when Moshe went up to the skies and they couldn't figure out where he was. Lo yadanu mehayalo. We don't know what happened to Moshe. I mean, all of a sudden they said, we need something physical to remind us of Moshe. We need to be able to touch something, to say, this can be our Moshe Rabbeinu. This will be our Moshe Rabbeinu that I can touch and I can feel, and this is it. Otherwise, they felt spiritually deprived. They felt like they were spiritually, they just were missing something. That's something that we have to understand. Not always is that true. There's no deprivation in the spiritual just because you're missing something physical. There's a connection, but you got to figure out when the connection ends and when it starts and everything like that. That was the whole problem with the ego. Yeah, what were you going to ask?
Go ahead.
Okay, that was number one. Later on in the parsha, a lot of strange things get brought up over here. Each one has to do with this concept that I just mentioned. The sink that was used for washing the hands all of a sudden makes you kadosh, all of a sudden makes you holy. You wash your hands and you become holy? How does that work? A physical act makes you spiritually holy? A very strange thing. It goes into making the ketores, smelling something that was a spiritually gratifying pleasure. Okay, it goes on and it mentions Bitsalo ben Uri ben Bechor, who also had a lot of powers, finally goes into Shabbos. And the famous psukim are written in this week's parsha. Vishamru b'nei Yisrael se Shabbos. Lasus se Shabbos ador tzemri solom. We know Vishamru, right? So tell me, what was said on the Aseret Dibros? The word Zachor or Shamor? Zachor means what? Remember the Shabbos and make it holy. Shamor means what?
Guard
the Shabbos. Safeguard the Shabbos and make sure that you don't do anything wrong. In the first Aseret Dibros, the first Ten Commandments, the word Zachor was used. Remember was used. Later on in the second Aseret Dibros, later on when we mention it again in Parshas Vaschanan, the word Shamor was used. So really, Chazal say both of them were together. And when God said one word, he really meant both. And both were heard. Meaning you would be sitting there and I could have said, or God said Zachor and Shomer together and you heard both of them at the exact same time. But there's Zachor over here and Shomer later on. Why?
Why so, did you say both?
Yeah, why not say both in the same place? Why does it have to mention one in one place and one in the other place? What's the point of that?
I said you wrote Zachor and Shomer in your Moshe.
It should be that way. It doesn't say that way, but it should write it that way. It doesn't sound that good. It's not a good answer. It's not a good answer. Technically, they should be together. You're telling me, it would sound good if you heard it like 30 times. If I told it to you 30 times, you'd be like, oh yeah, that sounds great. You just get used to it after a while. So what's the deal? Well, why does it be that way? Okay, so Zachor again means to remember, right? Shomor means to keep it safeguarded. Zachor means to do something on Shabbos that you wouldn't do otherwise. Shomor means don't do this on Shabbos. Now, what are you not allowed to do on Shabbos?
Work.
39 malachos, right? The 39 different things that we have that's work on Shabbos. Can't do that. What are you supposed to do on Shabbos? A special thing that you have like a mitzvah say, a special mitzvah to do?
Rest.
Not rest. That's not a mitzvah to do. Kiddush.
Yeah.
Make Kiddush. You're supposed to make the bracha of Kiddush and make sanctify Shabbos by calling it holy. That's what you're supposed to do, right? Listen to this verse. So why does it say Zachor over here and Shomer over there? The Jews, when they heard Zachor is Yom Shabbos by the first Aseret Dibros, by the very first Ten Commandments, what happened to them at that point? Anybody know? Were they able to sin? They were perfect in every which way, right? There was nothing wrong with them. They couldn't do anything wrong. They were perfect. They had just gone and seen the Ten Commandments. They had gotten the Ten Commandments. God had given them the ability to never die. They were never going to sin. They didn't even have an evil inclination inside them. There was nothing wrong with them whatsoever. But once the Egel Azov came along, that golden calf came along, all of a sudden they had the ability to sin again. So by the second Luchos, it changed a little bit. What happened was like this. By the first Luchos, could they do anything wrong? They couldn't. So they automatically were safeguarding the Shabbos. What did they have to do on Shabbos itself? All they had to do was they had to make Kiddush. To separate that day from every other day, they had to make it different by doing something different. So it says, Zachor is Yom HaShabbos HaKadosh. Make Kiddush instead. But later on in Parshas Vaschanan, when they already sinned and they did something wrong, then what word does it use? The Shomer is the Shabbos. Because now they sinned already. Now they have to watch out. Now you got to make sure you don't do the wrong things. So therefore it says the word Shomer. The problem is right here, before the eagle is mentioned, it says Vishomru v'nei Yisrael is the Shabbos. They kept Shabbos. They were Shomer is the Shabbos. But how could they? They didn't have a problem with doing stuff like that. They didn't have the ability to do any sins. So what's the idea of Vishomru over here? So it's an unbelievable answer. It's all from the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer says, what did they do at this point? They were chayiv to build what? A Mishkan. So you would think that a Mishkan would trump Shabbos. That when they were chayiv to build a Mishkan, they would be able to what? They'd be able to build it even on Shabbos itself. It says Zachor over here, Shomer over there, but then it says Vishomru right after it says Zachor. So what's Vishomru doing over here? What malacha were they going to do? Because they were told about the Mishkan. And they've got to build up the Mishkan, which means they got to do work. They're required to do work. If they're required to do work, what's going to happen? They're going to violate Shabbos. So now it has to say Vishomru b'nei Yisrael Shabbos. Don't worry. Even though the Jews had to do a lot of work, they kept Shabbos and they didn't profane it by doing the work on Shabbos itself. That's why it says Vishomru that they actually did it that way. Okay. Moshe is on Har Sinai for how many days? We all know, right? 40 days and 40 nights the first time around. 120 altogether. After everything happened. fast, but originally he's on there for 40 days, 40 nights. What does he do when he's on that mountain for 40 days, 40 nights? What does he do? Gets the Torah. Gets the Torah the entire time, right? He's fasting, obviously, but he's getting the Torah during that time. How can you understand the entire Torah in 40 days? It's impossible. Absolutely impossible. But what does that mean? I don't understand. Did you just read through the Parshios? I know there was no Rashi. I know there was no Gemara. There was no Mishnayos or anything like that. But what did he learn? What was it that he was given? Was he given the concept of every letter or what every letter teaches you? That would take years. Years to go through every single letter in the Torah. Every single little Nakuda. Every single thing that you can get out of everything in the Torah. That's going to take a ridiculous amount of time.
Didn't you say that we actually did get the Gemara and Mishnah?
We got the concept of Gemara and Mishnah and everything. We did get that concept at Har Sinai. So what does that mean? How was he able to learn it all in 40 days? How was he able to get it all in 40 days? Yeah.
The Torah can't be compiled as we have it now, I guess, at least not with...
Now with all the things that are going to happen later on, you're going to say, because he couldn't have known the future. That's also a big question. What did he get? So there's a machlokas, yeah.
Moshe went up and brought down the first luchos and told him all the laws, and then he went up again 40 days and 40 nights?
To daven for Bnei Yisrael that they shouldn't be destroyed, and then afterward went up another 40 days and 40 nights to get the second luchos, the second thing.
Didn't they already have a lot of stuff before Moshe went up?
100%, but they didn't have everything. They didn't get the real stuff. They only got Kibbutz of Aim and Shabbos and stuff like that. Now they got the real stuff. Not yet. Definitely not yet. He did not know anything yet.
They knew a lot.
They knew a lot, but they didn't know the Torah. They didn't get the Torah. Yeah, but they didn't get the Torah. They still didn't get the Torah. So what are they supposed to get? So some say that he learned the Kollam. He learned the general rules. But he learned the general ideas. Here's what you got to know. And here, go through and work through the Torah and try to figure out what the Torah says. That's one thing. That's one way of looking at it. But the second thing that they say, there's another Medrash Rabbah. Medrash Rabbah says an unbelievable thing. You know what was supposed to be? If Bnei Yisrael wouldn't have sinned with the Egel Azov, you know what they would have gotten at Har Sinai? Just the 613 mitzvos, and that's it. They would have gotten 613 mitzvos to go through, from number 1 all the way down to number 613, and all these words would have just been 613 commandments. They would have been just that and nothing else. No stories, no midrashim, no anything like that. Everything would have been very straightforward, extremely straightforward, and then we would have been able to figure out everything. And that would have had to have been given to Moshe Rabbeinu as like a sale, something that Moshe Rabbeinu would have gotten, but it was something easy enough for Moshe to attain. He was able to understand all 613 mitzvos with all the individual laws that go with them. Okay, here's the idea of Pidyon HaBen. Go ahead and do the following, and you gotta know this, and this, and this, and this. Okay, that takes a little bit, but you're able to figure it out. Here's Korban Pesach. Do this, and this, and this, and this. All 613 mitzvos were able to be explained one after the other, one going down after the other. They were able to get every single one of those 613 mitzvos. They would have understood it. But once they sinned at the Egel, people were not the same anymore. You can't go through... Has anybody ever tried going through the Rambam before? Let's go through all the Sefer HaMitzvos. Let's go from one mitzvah to the second mitzvah to the third mitzvah. I guarantee you, if you start it, you'll be bored after number 37. Number 37. Why do I say 37? I tried it 3 times. I can't get past mitzvah number 37. And there's no way you get bored. I'm sorry to say it. Our minds are not made to just memorize facts. They're not made that way. I know there are some people that can just memorize, but that's not the point of learning. The point of learning is to find something gishmak inside it. To find something in it and to be, oh, here it goes. To have a story once in a while. To have a little legatus of Gemara where Rabbi Yochanan went ahead and killed somebody. That's the point of a Gemara. To be able to go through and not only tell you the laws, I hate, and it just happened, I just overheard some kid learning with another guy in a base medrash. And he's like, all I care about is the law at the end. I went up to him and I said, no! What's wrong with you? You don't care about the law at the end, you care about the process. The law at the end, what are you, a stupid little girl? You just want to know what happens in the end and that's it? No, you don't look at the end of the book to just say like, he dies. Okay. That's it. You don't do that. You want to see what happened. You never want to go. Maybe you'll peek at the end before you go. So you look at the halakha. But the real point of the whole book is the storyline. It's to go through the whole thing. So too when it comes to a regular Gemara. When you come through a whole Gemara and you end up with a teiku at the end. You don't say like, oh, that was a waste of my time. No, it wasn't a waste of your time. Who cares about the end off, what ends off at the very, very end? It's the process that's supposed to be awesome. It's the process that should get get you to say, wow, that was awesome. I just had a great time. I had a great time. I just learned how to get from one place to the other place. And to be able to improve your mind skills and to be able to learn up a sugya on your own, to be able to do stuff like that on your own. What Moshe Rabbeinu was learning up until that first point, when he was on the mountain for 40 days, 40 nights, all he was learning are the 613 laws. But then they sinned with the golden calf, and then Moshe Rabbeinu had to go up again, and this time the Torah was given with stories. All of Sefer Bereishis became stories of Adam Rishon and Noah and Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, and then finally Moshe is born, and all this, everything was thrown in to the second Luchos. But that never would have been there by the first Luchos, says this Medrash Rabbah. An unreal Chiddush. Can you imagine that? We wouldn't have this Torah. If everything goes up, this would not be our Torah. We would have the same letters, but they would be written in different ways to tell us the 613 commandments, and that's it. It wouldn't be the way we know it today. Maybe now you can understand the very first Rashi in the Torah. You know what the very first Rashi in Torah says? Why do we start off with Bereishis Bara Elokim, how God created the world? Who cares? Start off with Achodesh Hazeh Lochem, the very first mitzvah in the Torah. Start us off with the very first mitzvah in the Torah. That's what you should start us off with. Why do you have to go through these stories? And the Torah says, because you have to go and answer people, you have to do this, you have to do that. The answer is because we're not in the same world anymore. Had it been the world of the first Luchos, things would be different. We just have the 613 mitzvahs, nobody would argue with us, nobody would say anything to us, and everything would be all good. Now we're in a world where people complain, where people hate us, where bad things happen to the Jews. And now we need to have these stories to tell people, this is what Adam did, this is what Noah did, this is what Avram did, this is what Yitzchak did, this is what Yaakov did, and therefore we have the mitzvahs. But without them, it would have been fine. We just had the mitzvahs, and that's it. And that's the idea of Torah Shebaal Peh was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu only during the second time, and during those second 40 days, he learned the Klalim. And that's when he brought them down to Bnei Yisrael, and they spent the next 39 years discussing these general rules to be able to come out with what the Torah is that we have today. That Torah that we have today. Alright, that's the idea behind it. Now, okay, Hashem knew the ego was happening, right? Hashem knew that the golden calf was happening, that it was happening, and that the Jews were doing it, right? So why not send Moshe Rabbeinu down a little bit early and stop it? Wouldn't that be a smart move? Like Hashem didn't see it coming, where he wasn't like, you know.
He didn't tell.
He told Moshe. What did Moshe do after that?
He spent
another couple hours in Shemayim davening for Bnei Yisrael. Just go down. Stop him. If you get there before anything starts, then everything's all good. The Eagle stuff never happened. Wouldn't that have been better? Wouldn't that have been a better idea? Why keep him up there? Two ways of answering this question. The Or HaChaim is number one. How many days was he up there for? 40, right? There are four parts to Torah. It's called Pardes, the orchard of Torah. Pardes stands for Pshat, the literal translation. Remez, the hints behind the Torah. Drush, I'm going to use a hard word here. Okay, this is four syllables. I try not to do four syllable words. Homiletic interpretations of the Torah. Forget about that. Pretend it wasn't there. Sod is the secret to the Torah. That's Kabbalah. Sod. Again, it's Pshat, Remez, Drush, Sod. Altogether, that's called Pardes. It's called the orchard of Torah. Each one of them has 10 levels. 10 levels to each one of them. 4 times 10 is?
100.
That's terrible math, but good math by everybody else. 40 altogether. 40 altogether. 40 levels that you have to do altogether within the Torah. 40 levels in how many days? 40 days. Each one of those levels took a full day to understand entirely. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have come down just a little bit early, they would have lost out on the 40th level of Torah. And that's something that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to do. And that Hashem didn't want them to have. There was a conscious decision made. It's not worth it. Even though the Bnei Yisrael are going to sin, it's not worth it for us to lose that amount of Torah.
They lost it all anyway by not getting the Mitzvot. They got the Torah.
They didn't lose it. They got all this Torah, and we can work our way up to such Torah, and people can get more reward by getting that Torah, which leads us to our second answer.
It would have been better to get 39 levels.
It wouldn't have been better. It wouldn't have been better. Why? Because of the second reason. And this really leads into that first reason. Shut up! Yes. But let's try to understand why. Now we get to the second level. I know, I'm also confused. That's the second time I've said that word in Tushirin. That's not bad, by the way. That was the horrible lunch. Okay, anyway. Second time. This is how it goes this time. This is how it goes this time. There's a second answer to the question. And that is that Bnei Yisrael had to worry about a major thing. What was Aaron thinking? Can you imagine what Aaron was thinking over here? Hey, you know what? Why don't I make a golden calf for them? That's a great idea. Why not just say to them, Moshe's coming back tomorrow, guys. Don't worry. Let's wait 24 hours and I'm sure it's going to be okay. But no, that's not what Aaron did. Aaron's like, all right, grab your gold. Let's make an idol. Let's just go. And he like made it into a game show. What in the world was Aaron thinking? Was that a smart thing to do? B'nai Yisrael were chayiv for the thought that was wrong. Now, a thought of Avodah Zarah is as if you did Avodah Zarah. But if you think about doing Avodah Zarah, you don't think you did anything bad. Meaning, let's look at this guy right now. This guy who's sitting there and saying, I want a golden calf. What does he have in his head? He's got thoughts of worshipping idols. He needs to atone for that. That's a terrible, terrible thing. And he needs a kapara for that right now. He won't survive unless he gets a kapara for it. But he'll never think he needs a kapara. Because he thinks to himself, I never did anything wrong. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have came down immediately, I said, guys, stop doing the eagle's off. Stop before it ever happens. They would have thought, oh, phew, he saved us. But they won't even realize they did something wrong. They needed to get punished for it. What Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron allowed them to do is once they both saw that their thoughts had come into fruition, that the thoughts were in their head, and they're already chayiv, they wanted them to get their atonement. They wanted them to get their kapara. Let them go through with it. Those who were the Rishayim, the big enough Rishayim to go through with it. Let them go through with it. Bring them whatever they need to go through with it so that they realize that they're wrong and that when they die, they'll go straight to Olam Haba. And that's exactly what happened. What happened when Moshe Rabbeinu came down? What happened? The people willingly let themselves be killed by Shevet Levi. They willingly drank the Meisota. They stopped doing everything when Moshe appeared in front of them. They knew they were wrong. They realized they had done something wrong. Now they could get a kapara. Until that point, they weren't going to get a kapara, and that's something that Moshe Rabbeinu needed to make sure that they got, that Aaron needed to make sure they got. Otherwise, terrible things, even though you're right, they never would have done the Egel Azov. The thoughts of Avodah Zarah would have stayed inside them. They never would have thought they did something wrong. It's like a guy who blows to a stop sign every single day of his life. He doesn't think he does something wrong until he gets caught by the cops. All of a sudden, the cops pull him over, give him a ticket for blowing through a stop sign. All of a sudden, oh, I did something wrong. Now I realize I did something wrong. But until that point, you don't think you're doing anything wrong. Everybody does it. I mean, come on. You're speeding. Everyone does it. You don't realize until something actually happens. It was the same exact thing with the Egel Azov. It had to be shown to them. You guys, you can't think this way. It can't be a thought that enters your mind. But we do have to figure that out a little bit more. We do have to figure that out very, very much more. There is a Rabbeinu Bachai that compares it to Adam Rishon and the sin of the Eitz Hadas and everything. But this is a very, very crazy, crazy board. What was going on with B'nai Yisrael over here? Now, you have to understand something. When you read through the Torah, and I mean in English, if you read through it in English, it's very straightforward. And it seems that a lot of things look like terrible things. Like, oh, the Jews were terrible. Oh, you know, hey, Avram did this, Avram did that. Sarah did this, Sarah did that. A lot of things, when you look at it literally and you translate it through the English, it's not good. You look at it, you're like, what in the world just happened over here? What happened? How could this have happened? And you think to yourself, they made a golden calf 40 days after they saw God at Har Sinai? I mean, that takes guts. That takes a lot of guts. How long? 83 days after they saw, I believe it's 83 days altogether. It could be a little bit more. 83 days, am I right? 40 plus 43? Yeah, I think something like that. 40 plus 40 to 83 days altogether since Kriyas Yamsuf. Since they saw Kriyas Yamsuf and they saw everything that happened. They're willing to worship a golden calf? And they're able to say, this is the God that took us out of Egypt? You just pulled a golden earring off your ear, threw it into a fire, a calf came out, and you're like, oh, that's what took us out of Egypt? What kind of an idiot thinks that way? What kind of an idiot is like, takes his watch, melts it down in a fire, turns it into a cow, and just like, here we go, here's my God. What were they thinking? What kind of a thought process is that? What kind of a stupidity is that? So if you look at the psukim themselves, you're going to see something unbelievable. It says like this, The people gathered to Aaron, but Yom Rilam, they said to him, Kum ase lanu Elohim. Get up and make for us gods. Gods, right? Asher yehu lefaneinu. These weird words that will go in front of us. Kizem Moshe ha'ish. Asher alanu meir t'mitrayim lo yadana mehayilo. This guy Moshe that brought us up from Mitzrayim, we don't know what happened to him. So you gotta make for us a god. Gotta make for us a god. Now let's take this pasuk little by little. The Ramban does this. This is a tremendous secret that's told only the people who can really understand what the Torah wants to tell us. Kizem Moshe ha'ish. They knew that Moshe wasn't a god. They said straight out, this man, Moshe. They were very clear that they never believed that Moshe was a god. They knew there was a god out there. They knew there was somebody above Moshe Rabbeinu. They never pretended to think that Moshe was a god. They knew he was a regular person. This guy, we don't know what happened to him. So why would they want a god now? They already have a god. They know there was somebody out there. So what are they asking for? They're asking for Asher Yehu Lifaneinu, someone to go in front of us. What does Elohim mean? I know it can mean a god, but what else does it mean in Chumash? A judge, a leader. We want someone else to lead us. We want someone else to go ahead in front of us and be the intermediary between us and God. We want someone else to be that guy that's right in the middle, because we can't talk to God directly. We got it once at Har Sinai, but we're not going to be able to constantly talk to God. Said the people, we're not so sure where Moshe is. We think Moshe might be dead. The Satan showed them a bed of Moshe and it looked like Moshe Rabbeinu was dead. We don't know what to do. What if we have to travel? When's God going to tell us that? What is he going to do? Send us something that will be able to go in front of us to tell us everything that we need to do. Show us somebody. Show us something that we can have that will be able to show us everything that we need to know. That's Asher Yehu Lefaneinu. Not L'chaim O'Lamavis to kill us and to make us live. We can bow down to it and this and that. No, we don't want that. We don't want that. We don't want that. We want Elohim, a leader, Asher Yehu Lefaneinu, to be another Moshe Rabbeinu. Then we'll listen to him. And if Moshe Rabbeinu ever comes down, we'll go back to Moshe. What happened when Moshe came down? They listened to every word he said. Moshe Rabbeinu came down, smashed the luchos. They're like, oh crud, I can't believe we just did this. They all turned to Moshe and they said, Moshe, what do you want us to do? If it was really their God, you think they'd let Moshe Rabbeinu crush it into little tiny pieces and then put it into water? They're a God. They wouldn't let him crush it. They'll say, Moshe, you're gone. We don't know who you are. This is our God. No, they wanted it to be an intermediary until Moshe Rabbeinu came back, if he would ever come back. That's all they wanted. They wanted an emtsoi, a middle guy in between. That's the secret behind the pasuk. I know it says the word Elohim, and immediately like, oh, evil alos harbe, Rashi says. They desire tremendous amounts of gods. That's not what Rashi means. What Rashi means by that, says the Ramban, is that they weren't so sure what they wanted. They weren't so sure what they wanted. Listen to this. Lo yadanu mehayalo. We don't know what it was with him. What do you mean you don't know what it was with him? You know he died, right? You know what happened to him? You know he died. You just saw the Sutton up there. What do you mean you don't know what happened? You saw his bed. You see his coffin. The Sutton is showing you the coffin of Moshe Rabbeinu with him lying down dead on top of the coffin. He's showing them a picture of that, a hologram in the sky that he's able to show them what they... You don't know what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. And also the word meh hayalo. It should be ma hayalo. We don't know what happened to him. What's meh hayalo? They had an unbelievable line. When Moshe went up to Shemayim, did God know that Moshe was going to die after 40 days? Within 40 days? God would know, right? God knows everything. They believe that. So why did Hashem tell Moshe to go up to the sky if he knew he was going to die by the time when he got up there? Why would he tell him to go? Does that make any sense? So they said, yeah, God did know. But Moshe didn't know. Why didn't Moshe know? Must be that Moshe doesn't talk directly to God. He had an intermediary himself. He might have had a little, what do they call them? A little walkie-talkie. He was able to talk to God with. And not always was he able to get a clear connection. So he didn't know when he was going to die. He thought God was telling him, be up there for 40 days and then come down. But really what God was saying, I want you to come up for 40 days and then you're going to die. They thought, lo yadanu mehayalo. We don't know what it was that Moshe had that served as an intermediary between us and him, between us and God. There must be some type of walkie-talkie that was in between us and he was able to talk with him. And that's why he wasn't able to know everything that God wanted. He wasn't sure. So they said, we need something that's going to be that intermediary. What should the intermediary be? Well, let's figure it out. Should it be a cow? Should it be a lion? Should it be a bear? Should it be a turtle? Should it be a penguin? They didn't know. Lo yadanu mahayilo. And that's what it means by evu la lo sarbe. They wanted a lot of gods. They weren't sure what exactly was that they wanted as an intermediary. They said, let's try it out. Let's try a sheep. Let's try a cow. Let's try a lion. Let's try all this. Aaron said, give me your gold and I'll show you what you're supposed to get as a leader. Now we have to understand what Aaron was doing over here. First of all, why didn't they pick Aaron? Why not go up to Aaron and say, you be our leader now? Wouldn't that be a logical choice? Number one is gone. Let's go to number two. Not, hey, let's make something. Go to number two. Go to the number two in line. Aaron is next. Aaron, you be our leader. You'll be the guy who talks to God. They couldn't do that. You can figure out why very, very easily. The Ben Ish Chai says, couldn't do that. Why? Because they knew that if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't make it, why would another person make it? Of course, if Moshe Rabbeinu ever came down, he'll be jealous of another guy that got put in his place. But if you make an intermediary that's a statue, you make an intermediary that's an animal, Moshe Rabbeinu's not going to be upset about that. We know that we're going to take it away as soon as Moshe Rabbeinu comes down. That's going to be a lot better. And plus, we know that no person is going to ever compare to Moshe Rabbeinu. Nobody's going to ever be like Moshe. So it's good enough for us to use this, and this should be good enough.
You're solving the whole thing. This whole thing is this makes it seem like they did nothing wrong at all.
Oh, ask the Rabbeinu Bechaya. So why did they deserve to die? What was wrong? What did they do wrong? This was a great call. We understand why they didn't want Aaron at Tzaddik. Aaron at Kohen Gadol. We understand what they were doing. They wanted a leader. They understood what it meant that there was a God out there. They just weren't sure what Moshe Rabbeinu had. What did they do wrong? What was wrong with them? Says Rabbeinu Bechaya. You know what happens? You know what happens when something like this happens? The Erev Rav brought it into their heads. And slowly but surely, even though their original intention was unbelievably good, the original intentions were only good. Slowly but surely it started entering their minds. This golden statue is God. Slowly but surely. 600 people were fully fooled. They were completely gone. They were 100% completely gone, and they said, this is our God. And the next day the Mamish bowed down to it, and the Mamish sacrificed to it, and they did everything to it. 600 people Mamish the next day went ahead and treated it as if it was an actual God. But the day before, they were like, we know there's a God in Shemayim, and this is just our intermediary. We know this is just like Moshe Rabbeinu. But after a while, it started settling with them. Oh, hey, maybe the golden thing is our God. Even though it was silly, it was a silly thought, after a while you get so used to it, as we said before, you can get yourself used to anything.
One day?
I thought just it took, yeah, even 12 hours it can take for something like that to happen. You can get so used to something. I'll tell you a quick example.
Most of the stars were things that did stuff for you.
There was something that this golden calf was able to do, which we'll get to in a minute. It was able to talk, it was able to walk, it was able to speak out, Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeiicha Me'aretz Mitzrayim. It said over the Aseret Dibros, 100%. It had a lot of power. It had a lot of power. And people, mamash, started being convinced. They started looking at it and saying, oh my gosh. Other people only started having thoughts in their head. But it was just like a balloon. A massive, massive balloon. The balloon's full of air. But you poke a tiny little hole in it, slowly but surely that air is going to come out. Sure, all the Jews said, come on, it's just an intermediary, it's not a God. But there was a tiny little hole, a tiny little breach in the system. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that can't be. So that's why he said, I got to destroy all of them. All the Jews deserve to die. That tiny breach in the system eventually will make the balloon flat. Eventually all the Jews will end up following. Shevet Levi were the only people who were able to say to themselves, absolutely not. It's garbage. They were the ones who were able to convince themselves. But even Shevet Levi, even though there wasn't yet a hole in the system, there was a poke in the system. It was like this inside a cup. They were poking a little bit into it. No crack yet, but it was starting to crack. And God knew that the more it went, the more it was going to go. Say, wait, things happen like this nowadays all the time. Let me tell you something. Do you think that anybody really likes the taste of whiskey? Is there anybody born with a taste for whiskey? There is not one person in the world. I will guarantee you, I'll put the money on this. I heard this from Victor Miller also. There's not one person in the world who has a taste for whiskey from the womb.
beer.
They don't. They don't say, like, oh, more, I need more. When you're 10 years old, you don't sit there and be like, I want more. You're doing it because you know that the way to be cool, the same thing with beer, in order to be cool, in order to do this, in order to that, you got to start drinking. So you get yourself used to it. And you may even start to like it. You know what? If you did that with cow dung, you might start liking it also. If you started drinking it one after another, you just took a cup of cow dung, you just kept downing it. After 150 times, it probably also tastes good. You just got to forget about it. No, don't tell me no, because try it. Try it. You can tell from these people all over the place. You can imagine. There's no such thing as something not becoming used to it. You get used to it after a while. You can get used to the cold. You can get used to the heat. You can get used to anything. Get used to anything. So too with this. Hashem knew that eventually it was going to go bad, and that was the problem with Bnei Yisrael. That was what was going to happen over here, and that was a major, major issue. Hold on, because we only have another 2 minutes. Let me go very quickly. Very quickly. Yes, the Erev Rav did have a lot of koach. And what they did exactly was like this. They saw that Aaron put the gold in the fire. They, first of all, handed the gold over to Aaron. Whenever a machashif, now keep this in mind, never take something directly from a magician. Guys, this will come up all the time. Never take anything directly from the hands of Harry Potter or anything like that. Because if you do, he'll have shlita. He'll be able to rule over anything that he gives you. Aaron took it directly from those guys, and immediately they had shlita, they had power over it. After he threw it into the fire, Micha, the evil Micha, who brought an idol out of Mitzrayim, Micha came along and threw in a little petek, a little golden thing, a little golden tablet. On it was written Ale Shur. It was the same thing that Moshe used to raise Yosef's coffin out of the Nile River. When Moshe used that, he wrote it down Ale Shur, and he put it inside the river. Immediately, the coffin of Yosef flew up to the top of the river. Micha dove in, grabbed the golden petek, kept it in his pocket, and waited for an auspicious moment. Here was the moment. Micha threw it in the fire. Immediately, a calf was formed. A shor of Tuma was formed. An ox of Tuma was formed. This ox was a half ox, half donkey. It was a tremendously tummy dick ox. It was an unbelievable ox made of Tuma. And it came out, and that's what's called an eagle, not a shor directly. It came out. Yeah, and that's a good one, actually. It came out, and it went up to Bnei Yisrael and started saying exactly what they thought. Started saying, because it had a name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shor, Shin Vav Resh. That is the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And started saying straight out, Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzivcha Me'aretz Yisrael. Started to eat grass, and the people were somewhat convinced. Somewhat convinced there's more to it. This is a real Amtsoi. Later on, certain people were convinced that it's Mamish Avodah Zarah. God saw that breach in the system and had to destroy them, because that had to happen right then. There's a lot more in this whole thing. What Aaron was thinking, that he wanted to bring in the north side of the Kiseh HaKavod, and the north side is the shore of the Kiseh HaKavod, and there's a Kadosh Dika shore, and the whole idea of Yoshua being the shore of Kedusha, and Bnei Yisrael fighting against Amalek, which is the shore of Tuma. There is tremendous Torah on this. But you know what? Let's go with this for right now. Let's go with this for right now. If anybody notices the macholos that they give, there's a lot of Torah on all this. When we have time next year, maybe we'll go through the whole Egel Azav and try to understand what's going on. For now, guys, it's unbelievable Torah. Just understand, Bnei Yisrael weren't wrong in the beginning. They were wrong in the end. Also, the Shogig V'Sofo Ben Mezo. All right, guys, have a good Shabbos.